We're still studying in the first chapter of 2 Samuel, and we're ready to begin at the 17th verse. David has just learned of the death of Saul, of the death of Jonathan, of the fall of the Israelite army at the hands of the Philistines. He is still at Ziklag, and he has been very saddened by this news, and he also had the one who claimed to have killed Saul put to death. We're getting a good glimpse of the true character of David. When David had rent his clothes, mourned, and wept, and fasted for the death of Saul, and done justice upon him who made himself guilty of it, then we might think that David had made full payment of the debt of honor that he owed to the memory of Saul. Yet this is not all. We have here a poem that he wrote on that occasion, and we see that David was as great a master of the pen as he was of the sword. And so this poem is a very elegant expression of David's feeling about the matter, his feeling about the loss of Saul and Jonathan, his feeling about the defeat of the land of Israel at the hands of the Philistines. And so verse 17 says, "And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son." So we're going to have this lamentation, this expression of grief given by David now. In verse 18, "Also he bade them teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher." Now, this phrase, "to teach the children of Judah the use of the bow," is a little bit perplexing. It seems on the surface that he is instructing Judah to be armed in the use of the bow as a weapon of battle. But we know that the use of the bow had been happening long before David said this. Although Judah was quite skilled in the use of the sling, it may be that they were neglecting the use of the bow for the use of the sling, and so he's wanting them to get back more to the use of the bow in that sense. Also, we note that this was the thing that brought about the defeat of Saul, was the skill that the Philistines had in the use of the bow, and so he may have wanted to make up for a deficit that the Israelite army had in not placing enough emphasis on the use of the bow. Those are all possibilities, but we find that in the original, the words "the use of" are not there. And so what he really is saying, that he bade them teach the children of Judah the bow. And it is thought by some scholars that this phrase, "the bow," is actually the title of this poem that David is writing. That's what he entitles it. That's what he calls this poem. And so he is instructing them to teach the children of Judah this poem, to pass this on, to let it be well known to the future generations of Judah. And so it is stated that it is written in the book of Jasher. Now the book of Jasher was probably a compilation of various poems about the nation of Israel. It was not necessarily inspired at all, and some are thinking that this poem that David writes here is not an inspired poem, but it's one that David wrote of his own ability, and consequently is not included in the book of Psalms, which is an inspired book. So it was written down, it was made available, and David does give instruction then that the children of Judah be taught this poem. So verse 19, he begins by saying, "The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen?" He's talking about Saul and Jonathan, and he may be speaking more in particular of Jonathan when he talks about the beauty of Israel and how that is slain upon thy high places. He's talking about Mount Gilboa, how the mighty are fallen. These were the mighty. These were the strong persons. These were the bulwark of Israel, and particularly the defense of Israel. Now they are fallen. And David says, "Further tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ascalon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph." So David is here very particular in not wanting this news to be spread among the Philistines. He is saddened, he's distressed at the very thought of the Philistines rejoicing and triumphing and making glee over the fall of his mother country, over the fall of the king and Jonathan. And so he foresees what these Philistines will do. And that's why he says here in his poem to not tell it in Gath, and do not tell it in Ashkelon. Keep it quiet. Don't go around talking about our disgrace. Do not spread the news of this thing. It's such a shame and distress to us among these heathen people, for they'll only take advantage of it, they'll only rejoice, they'll only triumph in it. And then he says in verse 21, "You mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil." Now, he pronounces a punishment upon the mountains of Gilboa for having this bad thing happen upon their surface. And this did not come to pass. It is not a true curse that David places here, but it's just simply an expression of his distress at what did happen in the death of Saul and Jonathan. And he says, in giving them a voice of displeasure, and showing that they had lost their usefulness in letting this happen, he says, "Let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you." So we know then that in order for any land to be productive, it has to have the blessings of heaven. It has to have the dew or the rain. It has to have some kind of moisture that is provided and allowed by God, or it is not a productive land anymore. It is of no benefit. And so that's the thing. If you want to cut a land off, if you want to make a land non-productive and worthless and useless, simply stop the dew and stop the rain. And then he says, "Nor fields of offerings." One of the most outstanding things of any field, any productive area, is that this is something that can be used to give offering to God from. A certain part of it is to go to God. A certain percent of it, a certain area of it, is to be God's. This was according to God's law. And so when it was not productive, then it had no offering to give to God. There was no field of offering there. And this was one of the greatest tragedies of an unproductive field, was the fact that it could not provide any offering for God. So he says, "Nor fields of offering. For there is the shield of the mighty vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil." That's where Saul died. That's where his shield fell down. And it was as though he were a common man, the way he had to die. He died as though he had not been anointed with oil, as though he were not God's chosen, as though he were not the true king that God had set over this land of Israel. And so we see then how that David truly does lament the passing of Saul. And we're going to see in the next few verses where David truly stresses the good qualities of Saul. You know, every person, regardless of how evil or how bad, they do have some good qualities. And Saul was the king. He was anointed by God. He did have a position. Even though he didn't fulfill all the things God wanted him to, even though he was a sinful person, he had good qualities. God had taken care of the vengeance part of it. David didn't have to worry about that. Now the way was clear, so far as Saul was concerned, for David to be king. And so he now remembers the good qualities of Saul. So he says in verse 22, "From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty." So when it came to fighting a battle, when it came to a show of bravery and skill in war, Jonathan and Saul were closely alike. Their bow, their sword, didn't turn away, didn't come back empty, but they were successful. They were successful in defeating the enemies of the land of Israel. And so he gives Saul full credit for this along with Jonathan. Verse 23, "Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions." And so he magnifies the good qualities of Saul and puts him in the same category as Jonathan in some areas. And when they were together, when they were working in harmony with each other, when they were both in unison with the will of God, then they were lovely and pleasant in their lives. They were very desirable people to be around. They were very valuable people so far as the work of God went, so far as the kingdom was concerned. And in their death, they were not divided. That is, they still had the same cause. They were fighting the armies that were enemies of Israel. They were trying to defend Israel against the Philistines. So in their death, they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. So he magnifies the good qualities of these two men. And we see that this is an especial mark of high character for David, since Saul was such a bitter enemy to him, since Saul had tried so hard to bring about his death. Yet, after Saul is defeated, David has only good to say about him. And he further says in verse 24, "Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel." So Saul was so good to you as a king. He brought about prosperity of the nation. He brought about a state of tranquility and a state of having these ornaments, these things that are beyond just the necessities of life. The scarlet you were clothed with, and the other delights that you were able to wear, who put ornaments of gold upon your apparel. You can give Saul the credit for this, and you should weep over him. You should lament his passing. You've lost a great king. And then he says in verse 25, "How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places." Now he has an especial area here of mourning for Jonathan. Jonathan was among the mighty, and he is called the mighty. The mighty are fallen in the midst of the battle. Regardless of how great a person is, how mighty a person is, in the heat of battle, they're always subject to falling. They can fall as a result of the blow of the enemy. And that happened to Jonathan. "Thou wast slain in thine high places." Here you were at the head of the army. You were leading God's people in battle. You were trying hard to have a victory. You're on this mountain, and you were slain in thine high places. And so he says, "I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women." And so he again illustrates and remembers the great love that he and Jonathan had for each other. They were closer than ordinary brothers. They had a pact between them. They had a covenant between them. Jonathan had helped David in times when David was sore distressed by Saul, in times when David's life was just, as David said, death is just a step away. His life just hung by a thread. Yet Jonathan was faithful to him to the end. And so he says, "Very pleasant thou hast been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women." That is, David had never had a woman to love him as faithfully as Jonathan had. As a matter of fact, his wife, Michal, had been given to another man. He lost his wife through either the entire efforts of Saul or the fickleness of the woman or a combination of things. She wasn't as faithful to him as Jonathan had been. Jonathan had risked his own life to help David. And so his love was greater for David than the love of a woman, so far as faithfulness goes. This has nothing to do with sexual appeal, nothing to do with a state of homosexuality or anything like that, and there's no remote intention of that intended in this. And so he concludes in verse 27 by saying, "How are the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished?" So regardless of how great, they can fall, the mighty. How are the mighty fallen? Talking about Jonathan in particular, and also this would include Saul, and the weapons of war perished. These weapons of war, they can, regardless of what they may be, they can be overcome. They can be made to perish. They can be made to fail. And so we then conclude David's lamentation and the first chapter of 2 Samuel with that 27th verse.